Chapter 12. Mexico. Día de los Muertos.
Luke Jensen rode up out of the gully and onto the rocky shale and shifting sand plain surrounding the city. He had no idea what the settlement was called. Ahead of him, the town was lit up in the night like some frigate on an endless ocean. Even from half a mile out, he easily heard the merriment and music of the celebration, all of it punctuated with the barking reports of firearms. Above the small city, bouquets of fireworks spilled across the sky in screaming streaks and brilliant explosions.
The Day of the Dead.
The holiday was in full swing as Luke made it to the edge of the city. The streets were packed with revelers, all dressed in some variation of skeleton attire and face paint. Brass bands played in a harmonious cacophony of trumpets and drums. Drunken celebrants emptied their pistols into the air. Senoras and senoritas danced in the street, wearing their dressiest finery and sporting brocade masks, escorted by gentlemen in mariachi suits with faces done up to resemble skulls. Finding a stable that was still open, Luke boarded his horse, leaving his own hat with his tack and saddle. He didn't know how long the hunt for Melicus would take. All he knew was that the man was somewhere in all this teeming chaos and festivities. As he walked down the street, he bought a gaudy serape and sombrero and promptly put them on. The serape covered the Remingtons. As he moved through the crowd, he considered what he knew about Melicus to try and anticipate the madman's actions. He knew the man was deeply religious, or superstitious, depending on your point of view. Whichever, he considered his worship of the Black God to be a very serious thing indeed. Día de los Muertos was exactly the kind of holiday he'd celebrate. But where? That was the question. Luke had all the money he could need. With the help of CG telling him of certain Indian paths through the desert, Luke had cut Melicus's trail once again and came upon the slaughter of the whites at the man's camp. He'd shed no tears for the murdered owl hoots, and he didn't bother trying to bury the remains he found. Let the desert be their grave, and the buzzards their worms. Despite his weak and battered condition, though, he had buried the captives, at least the ones he was able to identify amidst the slaughter. He had set out to save them.
I failed.
But laying them to rest with dignity was one last thing he could do for them. At a spring on the eastern edge of the Sonora, the Apaches headed north, and a lone rider had continued farther east. By that time, Luke knew the raiders' tracks as well as his own. The frontier was a wild, unforgiving place. The only law was the law made by good men with guns. He couldn't save the captives. While he lay weak with blood loss and racked with fever, they were lost. Not the first innocents consumed by the West, and most certainly not the last. But be that as it may, there was still the matter of Melicus. The outlaw headed east, where his name carried less weight, and his legend was less terrifying. Once it became clear which way the wolf was headed, it had become a race to catch him before the trail went cold. Luke rode day and night, pushing his horse as hard as he dared, until tonight he had seen the lights ahead of him and recognized instinctively that this was the end of the trail. No matter how much gold Melicus might have in his pocket from the slave trade, he wouldn't feel at home in the higher class establishments. He might want to drink good liquor, but he'd want to drink in a dive where sudden violence wouldn't automatically result in the law coming in. A place where a dice game could turn into a knife fight in the time it took a man to take a shot of rot-gut tequila. Small parades and processions filled the streets. As the night wore on, the revelers grew more intoxicated and louder. The sound of firearms going off increased. Several times, revolvers were discharged so close to Luke that his hands dipped toward his pistols of their own volition. In a run-down tavern, two drunk Mexican soldiers fought with knives over the affection of an ugly whore. Finally, as night began giving way to morning, Luke found a cantina at the end of an alley off a main thoroughfare. Slipping through the throngs of milling people, he ducked under the low door opening and entered the building. Here, the festivities felt different, less celebratory, and more raw. Most of the patrons weren't in costume, though loud laughter was the primary noise. Men diced at tables. A buxom Mexican woman in a low-cut dress ran a faro game. A girl who didn't look much older than 12 waited on the customers, bringing clay pitchers of beer to the shouting men. On one table, two scorpions were being forced to fight as men laid wagers. The owners pushed the deadly little creatures into each other using the barrels of their pistols. Pesos and American two-bit pieces littered the surface. Ignoring them, Luke began the same search he'd played out over and over again. Drifting to the back and trying to remain anonymous, he carefully surveyed the room looking for Melikus. In the shifting, aggressive crowd, he saw men sitting with their heads down, sombreros worn low on their faces, obviously not wanting to be noticed. None of them were the half-Ute outlaw. One of the serving girls came into the room through a beaded curtain, and Luke realized there was a second room to the establishment. Edging in that direction, he tried taking a peek through the doorway before entering. He got the impression of a small but still crowded section of the tavern, where more people seemed to be playing cards than in the front. He paused at the edge of the door, trying to search the faces of the card players. A waitress brushed past him in a scent of warm beer and petulia oil. Frowning, Luke stepped backward. A stumbling vaquero, bottle of tequila in one hand, slammed into him from behind, obviously staggeringly drunk. The contact knocked Luke through the curtain in an awkward, attention-grabbing lurch. Luke looked out as every face in the room came up at the fresh commotion. In the middle of the room, Melikus sat at a table, a pile of pesos in front of him. They made eye contact at the same time. Melikus's eyes grew wide even as Luke's hand dipped for his gun. Both men drew in sync with practiced ease. The waitress, oblivious to the danger, swung around, two beer pitchers in each hand, and stepped in front of Luke.
Serve it!
Luke stopped his trigger finger from contracting and tried to shove the woman aside. Melikus brought his .45 up and began fanning the hammer. Three shots cracked out like thunderclaps, silencing the entire establishment. One clipped the girl in the shoulder. The girl jerked and crumpled backward into Luke, who caught her with one hand. The patrons surged to their feet and began racing and fighting toward the door. Still holding the girl in one arm, Luke swung around and leveled the Remington. A mob of gamblers and drunken revelers pushed past him, filling the space between him and Melikus. The half-Mexican, half-Ute outlaw was on his feet, backing away from the milling throng of panicked humanity. Extending his gun, Luke took aim as the man turned to run. Several vaqueros bumped into him, jostling him hard, and he staggered a step. When he got his equilibrium again and looked up, Melikus was by the window. The eyes of the outlaw and the bounty hunter locked across the space. Melikus had one leg through the open adobe shelf of the window bottom and was about to duck through. Thumbing back his hammer and operating on pure instinct, Luke took a shot. The .44 caliber slug smacked into the wall next to the escaping outlaw, startling him. Melikus ducked under the frame and half fell from the window. Lowering the dead servant girl to the floor, Luke flipped a table and raced to the window. He saw a narrow alley cutting between two more populated avenues. He spotted a donkey bucking wildly on the end of its tether and knew which way Melikus had gone. He could do nothing for the girl. Now an innocent bystander was dead at the hands of the renegade, and Luke knew the local authorities would just as soon hang a white man for the crime. He had little choice but to escape and follow Melikus. He slid through the window, gun out, and headed down the alley toward the upset burro. Skirting and trembling the braying animal, Luke came out into a dirt street. This lane was not as choked with people as some of the others he'd walked down, and he was able to get a good view in both directions. Melikus had chosen speed over subterfuge, and he left a clear path of angry residents marking his passage as he went across the boulevard and headed for an alley mouth. Luke plunged into the crowd after the man, pistol out and in his hand. He knew he had at most minutes until the Federales would start to congregate in the area. Pushing through a river of skeleton-dressed men and brightly clad and masked women, Luke cut across the street. He reached the alley and came around the corner. Chunks of adobe exploded next to his head, and the report of a pistol echoed down the narrow lane. Ducking back, Luke crouched lower and came back around the corner. Melikus darted away, and Luke took off running after him. They came out into the street again. This avenue wasn't quite as crowded, but was still filled with partygoers. 50 yards down the street, Melikus was dragging a teenage boy off a horse, beating him in the head with the barrel of his pistol. People shouted in protest as the outlaw swung up into the saddle. Luke extended his arm and took aim. A group of terrified people ran in front of him, and he was forced to hold off firing. Whirling the mount, Melikus saw Luke and wasn't as restrained. The renegade fired twice, bullets burning past Luke like angry lead hornets and striking the ground with hard thumps that kicked up dust. Luke ducked toward a doorway to find cover. A shootout in the middle of a crowded saloon or street had never been his intention. From the safety of the doorway, he peeked around the corner and saw Melikus flying down the street, whipping the horse for all he was worth. The charging outlaw sent revelers in all directions, making the shot impossible for Luke to take.
Damn.
The murdering madman had escaped again. Now he had to get out of town himself before he ended up swinging from a noose on general principle.
We're not done.
We are not done! I promise you that!
Chapter 13. Chihuahua, Mexico. Let's finish this.
I go no further.
What?
I go no further. Beyond here is the land of the Bad Yaqui.
They stood in the foothills of the Cerro Mohinora, the highest location of the Sonoran Desert. The extinct volcano reached over 10,000 feet high. Luke Jensen had never been this far south before, but Melikus had fled into Chihuahua, and Luke had followed. This was the longest hunt Luke had ever undertaken, but Melikus's blood debt was simply too great. If it cost him his life, Luke would bring him down.
What do you mean, Bad Yaqui?
The scout made the sign of the cross. The Yaqui religion, Luke knew, was a strange amalgamation of Catholicism brought by Spanish monks and the tribe's original spiritualism that flowed and ebbed between the two in a way indecipherable to outsiders. The Yaqui had fought the Mexican army to a draw for the last 100 years. They could be dealt with, but none of them were to be taken lightly. If these were Bad Yaqui that Melikus had chosen to hide with, Luke wanted to know about it. The scout seemed reluctant to talk of it with an outsider.
The Black Mountain Yaqui.
He pointed to the volcano.
They've turned their backs on the ways of our people and taken up the Navajo worship of the fire god. Hashtag and his ways can be turned to evil.
All he needed to know was that the Yaqui ahead of him were possessed by the same bloody fanaticism as Melikus. That made them fair game as far as he was concerned if they tried to stop him. Fully outfitted now and healed up, Luke had come ready to wage war if need be. Reaching into a saddlebag, he gave the Indian guide a pouch filled with silver coins, their agreed-upon price. The man didn't bother to count it, an action Luke took as a compliment. Before the man left, Luke turned and regarded the way forward. A great black shadow lay across the land, cleaving the red flame of sunset. He stared upward at the dark crag, where it loomed against the dying sun. Startled, he suddenly narrowed his eyes against the glare. He could have sworn he'd caught a hint of movement along the upper ridge as he looked on, hand held to shield his eyes against the glare. It was too far to tell if it had been a man darting for cover, or perhaps a goat. Shrugging to himself, Luke examined the rough trail leading up and over the brow of the crag. Impossible to a horse, it seemed at first that indeed only a goat could traverse it. Looking closer, he saw how handholds had been chipped into place at some of the more narrow overhangs. He sighed as he realized that a great deal of his equipment and weaponry could not make the journey. He'd be reduced to knife and pistols if he wanted to make that climb.
You won't go any further.
I'm going north. I will go west first to see the great water, but I will return to my home.
Suit yourself. But if you will wait with my horse one day, I will give you half again as much silver.
The Yaqui looked dubious. The Indian looked very much like a man weighing out the price of silver against his own life. Luke waited, uncertain about what he'd do if the man simply decided to leave. At last, he made his decision.
Last spring is 3 hours back. I will wait one day there.
Fine. That'll work.
Whatever was going to happen, Luke knew, for good or for ill, it would happen well within the time frame of a day.
How will I get my money if the bad Yaki kill you?
You'll have my horse and rifle. That's a pretty fair price for a day of sitting beside a cool spring.
Fair. Vaya con Dios.
Vaya con Dios.
The man was already leading Luke's horse away. Tying down the Remingtons strapped to his leg and ensuring his knife was secured as well, without a backward glance, he began the long, treacherous ascent. The path narrowed at spots until he could proceed only by turning sideways and scraping through tight spots, perfect for ambush from above. Again and again, he was forced to halt his upward climb and rest for a moment, clinging to a precarious cliff face. Night fell swiftly, and the crag above him became a shadowy blur in which he was forced to blindly feel with his fingers for the holes and man-made cracks which served as a rude ladder up this precipitous slope. Upward he struggled, as the cliff bulged outward near its summit, and the path ran only wide enough to stand on tiptoes. If he slipped, he doubted he would be able to stop the slide. The physical strain wore at his hands and calves, while his mind played tricks on him, envisioning over and over what the drop would do to him if he should lose his grip. Time and again he slipped, and he escaped falling only by a hair's breadth. He forced his fingers into rigid talons that ached as they supported his body weight. He concentrated on putting one foot in front of the other, the ledge no larger than a tightrope. His progress went slower and slower, but at last he saw the cliff's brow splitting the stars, a scant 20 feet above him. In that moment, his mind flashed to the movement he'd seen earlier, and some instinct made him crane his neck and look up. A vague bulk, too large and too close to see properly, heaved into view, toppling over the edge and hurtling down toward him with a great rush of air. Operating on blind instinct, he flattened himself against the cliff face and felt a heavy glancing blow against his shoulder. The incidental contact almost ripped him from the wall, and one foot was swept off the narrow path, sending an avalanche of gravel cascading down the mountainside. In the next moment, he heard a reverberating crash among the rocks below. Cold sweat soaked his shirt and beaded his brow. He looked up, wondering if this was a natural hazard or some kind of ambush. Luke Jensen was a brave man, but the thought of dying helpless as a sheep with no chance of resistance turned his blood cold. He swallowed hard against the building fear. But then a wave of fury rose up in him, smothering his apprehension. And he renewed his ascent with near reckless speed, legs driving hard into the rocky crevice as his hands scrabbled for purchase. A second boulder didn't materialize, and nothing living greeted him as he clambered over the edge, rolled away from the brink, and leapt erect, pistol flashing smoothly from its holster. He stood on a shallow plateau that served as a sort of natural porch to a very broken string of sawtooth-ridged hills spreading to the west. The crag he had just mounted jutted out from the rest of the heights in a sullen promontory, looming above the desert below and serving as a barrier to the volcanic crater just beyond its rim. Silence hung heavy in the cool air. No breeze stirred, and no footfall rustled amid the altitude-stunted brush cloaking the plateau. Yet the boulder that had almost finished him had obviously not fallen by chance or any sort of natural happening. Ready for an attack, he studied the terrain around him. He felt the hairs along the back of his arms lift, and the sensation of being watched left his skin crawling. Gun still in hand, Luke started forward. For a while, the only sound he detected was the soft swishing of his own legs as he moved through a field of yellow cheatgrass. Occasionally, he stopped to scan about him when he came to rock formations or small stands of pinyon and white pines. Nothing met his gaze except dry, prickly shrubs and silent promontories of wind-shaped rock and shale. At last, he came to a place where the mesa broke into the higher slopes, and there he saw a clump of white pine trees blocked out in crude geometric shapes by the thick shadows enshrouding them. He approached warily, then halted as his gaze, growing accustomed to the darkness, made out a vague form among the somber trunks that wasn't part of them. He hesitated, tensed, pistol ready. The figure remained still and silent. Carefully, he advanced, poised to react instantly if any attack came. The figure was too small to be that of Melikus, but that didn't rule out one of his apparent Yaki followers. Finally, it was the odd slump of the figure's head that decided him. Drawing the second Remington, Luke walked closer. The shadows fell back to reveal the figure of a Mexican, pinned to the bole of a large white pine tree by Indian spears. The man must have been pinned while alive, and subsequently bled to death, because the front of his body was crusted with a dark crimson stain. His ears had been pinned to the wood of the tree by stone-tipped arrows, but the weight of his head had caused the lobes to stretch and begin tearing as the flesh decomposed. The jaw hung open and loose, swollen tongue lolling from the corpse's mouth.
Pretty obvious.
Beyond lay death. There had been plenty of death already on this bloody trail leading him to Melikus's door. It had been a dark, winding road indeed. But he was near the finish now. He could feel it. Finally. Pushing through the little copse of pine trees, he emerged at the foot of a rugged incline, the first of a series of ridges. As he went up the boulder-strewn slopes, the moon rose, illuminating everything in a soft, bone-white glow. In its light, the broken ridges and mesas loomed like the battlements of some grim fairy tale castle. He moved, keyed up and alert, ready to whirl at the slightest indication and begin firing with the Remingtons. He strode up the steep, narrow path, eyes searching like a hunting cat when he entered a section of strangely stacked rocks. The cairns formed a sort of natural stone grove, some of them reaching twice his height. One instant, the night was still and silent, and in the next, an Indian had appeared from behind one of the cairns. He had the squat body structure and straight black hair indicative of the Yakis, and he held a Henry repeater adorned with an eagle feather hanging from a blue beaded string. More movement from the left as additional Indians revealed themselves. Luke didn't hesitate. As the warriors emerged, he dropped and rolled across one shoulder. Coming up, he threw himself into the boulder field, keeping low, even as a pistol filled his hand. A cloud covered the moon, plunging the eerie landscape into inky blackness. A Yaki, no more than a dim shape in the dark, stiffened and came to a stop. Luke fired a second time, then ducked behind a 5-foot-tall cairn. Bullets whipping past his makeshift barrier, or striking rocks and ricocheting wildly. Luke knew he couldn't afford to get pinned down. Scuttling across the broken ground and using his free hand to support his crouch, he tried circling around. He paused in the narrow space between two boulders, ears straining to detect the slightest motion.
Jensen!
Luke remained silent. He thought the outlaw was only talking to trick him into revealing his position.
You were a fool to come here! This is no land for a white man!
Using the shouting outlaw's voice like a beacon, Luke began edging toward the sound. Turning, he caught a flash as a Yaki warrior in white coarse woven pants and top hooked around an ancient cairn, Henry rifle in both hands. Luke's hand flashed across his body and fanned his hammer. The Remington boomed, the shots stuttering hard on one another. The muzzle flash cast stark shadows against the stones. All three bullets slammed into the Indian, and he staggered under their impact. The Yaki fell backward, bounced off a boulder, and pitched forward onto his face. As the rifle slipped from dead fingers, Luke was already holstering his pistol and reaching for it. The body hit the gravel and bounced hard as the carbine came into Luke's grip. Spinning away, he bolted past a forest of rocks stacked into cairns that had probably stood since before the Spanish had even arrived in this land. His shoulder struck one pile a glancing blow as he pivoted in among them. Unsettled, the cairn toppled with a clatter, stones cascading down in a rush. He spun back the way he'd come as the night lit up with rifle fire. Bullets ricocheted wildly as he darted in among the rocks, knifing across the field like a fish in water. Stepping around a boulder, he honed in on the crash of a nearby rifle and caught a Yaki gunman from behind. The Henry in the Yaki's hands crashed, and the man went down. Cutting left, Luke darted in among the rocks. He came upon a hogan, a traditional southwestern domicile made of earth and wood. This one was made from pine logs packed with dried mud. There was a round mouth of a door and a smoke hole in the top. He froze, crouched in the lee of a rock, and watched the building. It was far too dark to see inside. Luke recognized Melikus's mount tied to the protruding eave of a support joist on the hogan.
Close to you now, Melikus.
He heard men moving surreptitiously out in the boulder field. He thought he counted at least three distinct people, but there could have been many more. There was no way of telling which, if any, were Melikus.
Damn.
He struck the ground hard and bit down on his own tongue. Pain shot through his mouth, and he saw stars. Seething at the discomfort, he twisted in the direction of the muzzle flash. His first round caught a Yaki low in the stomach, bending the man in half like a book snapping closed. His second round struck the Indian in the top of the head and dashed his brains out of his skull and splashed them on the rocks.
Jensen!
Melikus came out of the hogan firing a greener double-barrel 12-gauge. Several rounds of buckshot tore into his leg. Firing once, Luke missed and tried firing again, but the rifle was empty. Melikus and Luke each threw aside their long guns and scrambled for their pistols. The renegade's face was a twisted mask of rage. Melikus fired at a dead run as he broke for the cover of the rock cairns. Luke dodged and rolled away from bullets burned through the air where his torso had just been. Rolling to his belly, he snapped a shot, but Melikus was gone. Then, in that moment, the clouds parted enough for a bar of moonlight to illuminate the area. Light poured into the black mouth of the hogan, and Luke froze momentarily at what it revealed. A blonde woman, naked and bruised, with blood flowing from her nose, was bound by iron manacles to one of the pillared roof supports. She was looking directly at Luke, eyes wide with surprise and a sort of crazed animal hope. Luke pushed himself up, searching for Melikus. It was impossible to tell what the outlaw would do. Sometimes he fought, other times he ran.
What's it gonna be, Melikus?
Luke made a snap decision that the hogan offered some semblance of protection to keep him from getting flanked and leapt into action. He jumped up and sprinted toward the doorway, boots pounding hard into the gravel as he leapt over a boulder and dodged around a rock cairn before throwing himself through the opening. He landed heavily, then turned, pistol ready. The woman was sobbing, but seemed too distraught to form words as he entered. A Yaki sprinted forward, a Mexican Army Springfield held in his hands. Excited, the whooping Indian fired from the hip. The rifle cracked loudly, and the big boar round speared past Luke's head before slamming into the back wall of the hogan. Luke lifted his arm and sent two shots tripping out, one hard on the heels of the other. Outside, the Yaki stumbled in surprise as two bloody patches blossomed on his white homespun cloth shirt. Uttering a choking cry, the man went down to his knees, then pitched forward onto his face, the Springfield bouncing away as it fell from lifeless fingers. Luke's hands worked automatically in the moment of quiet that followed. He dumped his spent and smoking brass, letting them fall to the hard-packed earth of the hogan floor. As if of their own volition, his fingers reloaded the pistol by feel. Even as Luke's eyes searched out through the door, ready to drop the pistol he was reloading and draw the second Remington at a moment's notice.
Just hold on a little longer. You're gonna need to hold on just a little longer.
I wanna go home.
I promise. I'll get you home.
At that moment, a muzzle flash sparked out in the night. Luke saw the flame bursts wink from the dark crevice between two boulders. Without thinking, he fired two shots, putting the rounds into the dark where he'd seen the muzzle flash. He couldn't know if he'd hit anything, but he knew he had to do something to protect the girl. Turning in that stolen moment, he found where the manacles had been attached to the raw pole of white pine used to frame the wall. With a gasp, the woman, no more than a girl really, let her arms drop and collapsed inward on herself. Dozens of red angry welts adorned her slim white back. Fury burned in Luke.
Stay low.
He spun in place as he heard footsteps racing toward the Hogan. A figure appeared in the doorway, features no more than a black silhouette as he blocked out the moonlight. The click-clack of a round being seated in a Henry repeating rifle filled the Hogan, drowning out the audible metallic click of Luke thumbing back the hammer on his Remington. The guns blazed, and the Hogan was illuminated wildly by the muzzle flash of both weapons. Luke missed. A deadly .45-70 took Luke on the outside of his shoulder, gouging a bloody fissure through the muscle there. Crying out, he fired a second time. This round cracked the Yaki's skull and sent him collapsing back out through the door of the Hogan. Luke sprang forward immediately, heart pounding, breathing hard. He snatched up the Henry rifle and jacked a fresh round into the chamber. Carefully, he peeked around the edge of the door, head down low. He saw nothing but boulders and rock cairns in a forest of stone. He saw nothing but a living, dribbling little cascade of pebbles off a rock the size of a kitchen table.
Let's finish this, Malachus! You and me!
Thinking he detected motion, Luke whirled in that direction. He saw the swaying of low branches on a lone pine tree, standing surrounded by boulders, like a teacher by children.
All you do is run, Malachus! Stop running for once, you cowardly dog!
He jumped back as the wood exploded into splinters, and the gunshot report echoed through the fields of stone.
He's an animal. Kill him.
I'm trying, believe me.
Changing positions, he called out again.
You missed, Malachus, you red devil. Just like always. How many of your men have I killed now? More than you can count, I bet.
He waited to see if his verbal barbs found a home. The outlaw didn't answer. Carefully, Luke adjusted his position a third time and then risked a look out. Nothing moved. Above them, clouds began swallowing the moon again, casting long shadows over the area. From his position, Luke saw where a collection of boulders, some big as horses, others the size of water troughs, were nestled together in a little collection like headstones in a graveyard. He thought if he could get in among them, he might be able to maneuver more freely. The run would be a dangerous 10 yards, though. Still better than finding himself pinned down here. Satisfied he had little choice, he pulled back inside the Hogan. He looked at the girl. She stared back with terrified, fever-bright eyes. There were bite marks on her neck and breasts. It turned his stomach. Malachus needed to be made to pay for everything.
Everything. Charlie walks the horizon. Collins, Talbot, Delacroix, even O'Toole.
They hadn't ever really stood a chance against a full platoon of soldiers outfitted for battle. The Apaches working with Malachus had led them into a clever trap.
Take this.
Not taking his eyes off the doorway, he drew his left-hand Remington and passed it to the woman. Her eyes were wild, breathing fanatic, and once she took it, he wrapped his hands around hers before she could place her finger on the trigger.
Look at me.
She did as he asked, and he risked looking away from the doorway for just a moment.
Calm yourself. It won't help if you end up shooting me. Make sure of your target before you fire. Do you understand?
She nodded a quick, furtive gesture that could have been essentially meaningless in her mental state. Luke tightened his grip.
Say it. Say it back to me.
She swallowed hard and inhaled, and the act of answering a question seemed to physically calm her.
I'll make sure of my target before I fire.
Luke smiled to reassure her.
Good, honey, real good. My name is Luke Jensen. What's yours?
Sally. Sally Miller.
Sally, I'm gonna get you out of here, I promise. But in order to do that, I'm gonna have to go out there and kill that evil madman who stole you. You understand?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Okay. If I have to come back, I'll call out, okay? You hear me call out my name. You don't shoot, all right?
I understand.
It was clear she didn't relish the idea of him leaving her. Still, she was being brave about it. Luke's respect for her nudged up several notches higher than it already was.
You're a survivor, Sally, aren't you? Good.
Because she was going to have to be.
All right, then. I'm gonna go kill him.
He's got it coming.
He surely does.
Luke darted out of the Hogan at a dead sprint. Seeing the cluster of rocks ahead of him, he threw himself forward just as shots rang out from the opposite side of the boulder field. Another shot rang out and ricocheted off one of the table-sized boulders. Luke marked the location of the shots and began to visually map out his approach.
Have to circle around.
A task easier thought than actually done. Carefully keeping the Hogan in sight, Luke began crawling through the maze of rock. After he had gone a little way, he rose to his feet and proceeded in a crouch. He wove his way through the thicket of cairns and boulders, each turn capable of bringing him face to face with a deadly renegade. Once he thought he heard the scrape of feet on gravel, and he froze, poised. After several long moments of hearing nothing, he proceeded forward cautiously. He came upon the corpse of a Yaqui Indian he'd killed earlier. The man had died with his eyes wide open and staring. Blood had formed a coppery-smelling pond around his body. Carefully, Luke stepped over the corpse. He was in a narrow passage between two lines of boulders the size of small houses. The clouds parted, and moonlight like bone shimmered down, illuminating the scene in an otherworldly glow. Lit up as bright as day, the shrieking Melicus raced toward him with 36 caliber Navy Colts in each of his fists. The renegade's face was a twisted mask of blind rage and wild hate, his eyes burning with animal frenzy. Bullets shot past Luke to either side, the lead projectiles plucking at the cloth of his sleeves. A bullet sliced open a furrow along his ribs, and another did the same on his opposite thigh. Snarling, he dropped to one knee and brought the Remingtons up. The edge of his opposite hand found a hammer and fanned it until the pistol went dry. The charging Melicus stutter-stepped as rounds struck him. Then he shuddered like a man in freezing water. The last bullet Luke fired cracked his forehead like an eggshell and tossed his brains on the rocks in an unceremonious pile. He pitched backward, boneless, flopping to the ground in an untidy heap, arms and legs akimbo, as his eyes stared blankly up at the night sky. Ears ringing from the cacophony of gunfire, Luke slowly stood up. His chest heaved. He was alive.
I'm alive. I'm alive! I'm alive and Melicus is dead. At long last, Melicus is dead!
Luke supposed that when he thought about what was home to him, he thought about his brother Smoke's ranch. He was a wanderer, but that ranch and the family living there were the closest thing he had to a home. He had never traveled so far from home to hunt a man. Hands working automatically, he reloaded the Remington. There could still be a bad Yaqui around. He thought about the girl he'd found in the Hogan, knew she would likely suffer from this experience for the rest of her life. He could only hope that by returning her, she could heal. Killing Melicus couldn't undo the harm he'd caused, but it put an end to his reign of terror at last.
The saddle.
He found Melicus's black stallion in a small valley behind the boulder field. The basin formed a natural paddock, and the saddled mounts grazed there. A winding trail cut down the mountain, leading out into the plain. The stallion stood out like a giant among the Indian ponies. He dropped Melicus's corpse to the ground, and the girl, now dressed in stolen clothing, shied away from the body. Ugh. Horses didn't like the smell of death and also shied. He caught Melicus's mount by the reins and soothed him.
Easy, big fella, easy. Let's get that saddle off of you.
After a time, the horse was gentled enough to let him uncinch it, and he hauled it off and flipped it over before putting it on the ground. Luke was eager to get started on the ride down. No more Indians had made an appearance yet, but there must be a village close by. Yaqui were not the wandering raiders Apache tended to be. They were far more likely to remain within easy striking distance of their homes. Squatting down, Luke pulled the saddle blanket free and threw it aside. He stared down at the saddle. Sally looked down at him in confusion and not a little fear. There was an edge to the laughter that seemed dangerous.
Those dumb, stupid dreamers.
He wiped tears of laughter out of the corner of his eyes. The inside of the saddle pads were made from sheepskin. Any map drawn on their surface would stand out in bold relief. The saddle pads were bare.
There is no map.
Luke looked over at the body of Melicus. The man had lived by violence, and he'd sure as hell died by it as well.
I guess the only treasure is what I'm gonna get for your mangy hide.
It would have to do.
It would have to do.
Luke Jensen, The Bullet Stops Here, by William W. Johnstone and J.A. Johnstone, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2023 J.A. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Publishers copyright 2023 Graphic Audio LLC. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Adapted and directed by James Konachak. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Carlin Daigle. Executive producers Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Producers Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Narrated by James Konachak, with Bradley Smith as Luke Jensen, Holly Adams as Vina Delacroix, Wynn Delano as Malcolm Talbot, Kay Alluvian as O'Toole, and Rainer Gabriel as Melicus. With performances by Christopher Walker, Daniel Laca, James Lewis, Rob Morera, Sam Intrater, Ori Nash, Belshaber Rusape, Eva Wilhelm, Christopher Graybill, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Laura C. Harris, and Troy Allen. If you've enjoyed Luke Jensen, The Bullet Stops Here, be sure to check out Those Jensen Boys and The Preacher and McAllister series. Only on Graphic Audio.
Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,500 titles to choose from. Listen to over 150 binge-worthy series, from sci-fi to fantasy, to graphic novels, to mystery thrillers, to action-adventure, to westerns, and more. Check out our exclusive titles, available only in our dramatized adaptation format. If you'd like to listen to an entire series, you can conveniently purchase a download series set at graphicaudio.net. You can also earn loyalty reward points, redeemable towards future online purchases. Stream audiobooks immediately, or download them to listen offline on your mobile phone or tablet using our Graphic Audio Access app, which is available on all Android and Apple devices. We like being radically different when it comes to our audiobook productions. Listen to A Movie in Your Mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Visit our web store today at graphicaudio.net.